The song that was heard so many times during the American civil rights struggles of the 1960s did not give a deadline. We shall overcome someday. Someday is never completely here, it appears, as we head into the weekend that ends with the observance of the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The year since the last MLK Day featured the pandemic and police violence, street protest, and right-wing insurrection. That's the backdrop for Monday's celebrations, which have to keep people apart because of the pandemic. In the Rogue Valley, a video and a book are at the center of MLK commemorations. We have two guests so far and waiting for a third to join us. Vance Beach is the lead organizer with Base Southern Oregon, Black Alliance, and Social Empowerment Southern Oregon. Vance, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. Good to have you here. We do have all three guests now. Mandy Yapaw is a Native American activist and one of the book panelists. Mandy, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange, too.
Thank you. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Jessica Friedman's with us, too, a member of the Southern Oregon MLK Day Committee and a book panelist. And the book is Why We Can't Wait by Martin Luther King Jr. We'll get into that in a second. But first, we say hi, Jessica.
Hi. Good morning, Jeff.
It's good to have you all here. Vance, MLK Day events have been big for decades in the Rogue Valley. How weird to not have one in person.
Yeah, it was actually something that was very unusual. You know, 4 months ago, we kind of looked at this and we were like, what's going to happen for MLK Day? And so it was a situation where we really needed to, you know, scramble around and kind of pull all the community leaders that at least I knew from the last 6 years of being a part of, you know, the MLK celebrations in Southern Oregon together to see what was possible.
And so the specific nature of the events aside, how important is the message this year, given all that has happened in the country just since last year's MLK Day?
Well, I'll give you a little story. So, you know, Base Southern Oregon, the group the organization we've started, which Jess is also a part of, it actually formulated after last year's MLK celebration. Based on the video we did, We Stand Together, which some saw. And that video in particular was to really account for all of the great feats that, you know, Black Americans had accomplished and just really Americans in general. But what we really wanted to show was where we still are and where the lived experiences of Black people right here, right now, in Southern Oregon, what their experiences and realities are, and we got to account for that in several interviews. And following that video premiere, you had a month or so later, George Floyd happened. And then the country was set on fire with the largest protests in the history of this country. Hence, Base was born. So this year is very, very special for us because it's not only the birth of our organization, but it really accounts for the message that we were trying to present last year, where we continuously felt like the celebration was just a celebration and not really looking at some of the things that we needed to be hearing and understanding so we could have better communities going forward.
So you want to make this obviously more than one day a year when people pay attention to the cause and the needs of people.
Yeah, and that's the goal. That's the hope with this challenge that we have, and you know we're asking people to, you know, really accept this challenge of reading Dr. King's book and understanding his message, because it's really not a one day celebration and we're all good to go. It's a continuous understanding, because what we found is we still are in the same position that we were 57 years ago.
So it's a video presentation on Monday at 2 in the afternoon on RVTV, which is Cable 9, Cable 180 in Southern Oregon, and streaming also on Facebook Live. Jessica Friedman, tell us about the book, Why We Can't Wait. It's one that Dr. Martin Luther King himself wrote during his lifetime. It's still hard to believe that he didn't even reach 40 years of age, and it's been that long since he's been gone, too.
I think one of the things that was really remarkable reading the book was, one, reading Dr. King's words himself, and going through his outline for, you know, the problems that he faced and the fact that we still face so many of them today. And, you know, hearing in his own words, a toolkit that he used then that's still just as relevant now, that we can use to kind of bring ourselves forward in a moment that I think for a lot of us feels just as powerful as 1963 did.
Well, you know, sense of urgency then, and compare it to the sense of urgency you feel now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, after the year that we've all had, I think as a country and here in the Valley, with additional struggles that we've faced, you know, it's a time that we need healing. And reading the book together, Dr. King's words were, we couldn't, you know, no one could help but just be inspired and want to take Dr. King's words and actions into the community, and we're really hopeful that the rest of the Valley will get behind us.
Jessica Friedman, Vance Beach, Mandy Yapow, our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, talking about the Martin Luther King Jr. events in the Rogue Valley on Monday. We talked about the video presentation. There's also the reading of the book with further events to come about that. Mandy Yapow, is there some progress report for Native Americans? I mean, you have the NFL team in Washington is dropping its name. I noticed some offensive geographic names being dropped off the Oregon map. Does this feel like progress?
It does. You know, this whole last year has been a real racial reckoning, which we've needed to have. Dr. King talks a lot about you can't compromise on human justice issues. You know, you can't just be lethargic and uncaring about these things, because that's exactly why we can't wait. These things have to be dealt with. You know, we have to tell the truth about the past, and we have to have hopeful stories of the future. We worked really hard, the organizations I work with, to get Deb Haaland of New Mexico nominated for Biden's cabinet. And she, you know, when confirmed, will be in charge of the Department of the Interior, which is huge for Indian country. Absolutely monumental for us. So there is hope amongst everything else that's going on, and there is some progress, but we have to continue to educate, especially in the Rogue Valley. We feel like as a group organizing this event, there needs to be education around what Dr. King's message really was, his organizing tactics, his way that he built alliances between folks. And there's a lot that can be learned from reading this book, and I really, really enjoyed the challenge of reading it and going through it with the panelists.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Deb Haaland. I did see your piece about that this is a Native American member of Congress in line to become the Interior Secretary, which is, you know, about managing huge tracts of land in the American West, really across Indian country, essentially.
Right, and the Department of Interior also is the one that where the BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, is out of, and so also she'll be dealing with the tribal nations and a nation-to-nation relationship, which, you know, that's never been managed by a Native American person. So she has a lot of expectations are on her, but we're really hopeful, and we're really glad to finally have some representation in government.
Let's talk about the growing use of the term BIPOC, which somebody had to teach me on the air a few months ago, Black, Indigenous, People of Color. Are there advantages of using the term and identifying people and groups with advanced speech?
I'm sorry, Jeff, I cut out a little bit on me.
Okay, yeah, it's about the use of the term BIPOC. Talk about the advantages of using the term and identifying people and groups with it.
Yeah, the term BIPOC, yeah, Black, Indigenous, People of Color. It's definitely a term that's kind of surfaced itself, and people are becoming more aware of. I think it's an important term to use because, you know, the group is really kind of an associated group that has been oppressed, right, collectively for so many years. And I think it identifies kind of a collective versus kind of the isolated racial terms that we may use.
Is there any disadvantage in having several groups with some varieties of needs and desires being put in one grouping like that?
It's cut out on me.
Oh, okay. Vance, you couldn't hear me that time either?
No, it's cut out.
I'll say, Jeff, that...
go ahead, Jessica.
You know, this is Mandy.
Oh, Mandy, sorry.
There are some people that feel like sometimes... using the term BIPOC kind of washes over and kind of represents our issues as a monolith, because they're not. You know, Indigenous issues oftentimes are very separate from what's affecting the Black community, and likewise with the Latinx community, they can have different issues that come up that are not included in the issues that Indigenous people face. But we can all have our own, you know, issues that we're trying to work and policies that we're trying to push forward. And I think that using the term BIPOC does kind of unify us, because what's good for one of us is usually good for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Jessica Friedman, let's come back to the book. Monday does not mark the end of this Martin Luther King Jr. birthday celebration or project. More or less the beginning, really. What kinds of events follow and for how long?
Well, after we have, as you mentioned, the program at 2 p.m. on Monday, and then we'll have a live discussion, and we're really excited. We have some really amazing people joining us who were on the front lines of the civil rights movement. Dr. Geneva Craig, who many in the community know already, she walked with Dr. King, and we'll also have Dr. John Dolan, who was a freedom rider, and they'll be in discussion with all of the people who went through the experience of reading the book together. And they'll, you know, for audience members, they'll get to see us go through kind of a discussion of the book together. And then we hope that everyone will continue those discussions over the course of the year. We'll have facilitated group discussions, and you can already sign up for those on our website, somlk.org. And we'll also have discussion guides available for anyone who wants to host a discussion on their own. And we're really hopeful that Why We Can't Wait can be a common ground for people to have some conversations about difficult topics, about hopeful topics over the year ahead.
Do you feel like people are a little more, I'm not going to say interested, well, or just willing to have conversations that they might have avoided in the past because of the fact that we don't talk about it and it does blow up anyway?
Yeah, I mean, I think I will say, you know, I'm newer to the Rogue Valley, and I think you know, something that attracted me to this place, and I think attracts a lot of people, is you know, it is a special place here, and I think that grants us the opportunity to reach out to other people and wanna have these conversations. I think there's a lot of people, in particular after the past year, who want healing, who want to have discussion, who want to have, as Dr. King tells us, you know, these kind of uncomfortable moments that are necessary in order to create change. And we really are hoping that we can provide a platform for that.
We are talking with some of the participants and organizers for the Rogue Valley Martin Luther King Day celebrations on Monday, somlk.org. As you heard Jessica Friedman say, she is a part of BASE Southern Oregon, Black Alliance and Social Empowerment Southern Oregon, along with Vance Beach, the lead organizer. We also have with us Mandy Yapa, who is a book panelist, talking about Dr. King's Why We Can't Wait, and as also a Native American activist. You can join our conversation on the Jefferson Exchange. Your thoughts, your comments, your questions, your ideas about how Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday should be observed. And if you have an observance in your town that you want to make sure that we know about, join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Jess, I notice you have some notable participants accept the challenge to read Why We Can't Wait, including Governor Kate Brown of Oregon.
We're so excited with the momentum that the challenge has already gotten. Kate Brown was obviously a really exciting addition to who we've got, but we've got a lot of leaders from the community. We have reverends and pastors, and Julie Akins, the mayor of Ashland, Gina Duquesne, a council member in Ashland, people from, you know, the school district, the superintendent in Medford, Brett Champion, business owners. We're really excited with the momentum that it's taken, and I think our hope is that, you know, them setting the example will inspire other people, and we're glad that so many leaders in the community recognize how important it is to read this book.
You mentioned Gina Duquesne, who made it was one of the many stories of the past year. Gina Duquesne, the first person of color and LGBTQ person on the Ashland City Council, but this is part of a year that also included the disruption of an event in Rogue River last summer, the destruction of the Say Their Names Memorial in Ashland, followed by restoration, the murder of Aiden Ellison. Vance Beach, how do you help people get through these events and focus on the good and try to move to a place where we talk about them all?
Yeah, I think, you know, this premiere, this video, this message, it capitalizes all of these things that we're seeing today, right? And I think it brings into perspective kind of the focused mind that we should have on, you know, there's as we said, critical problems that occurred 57 years ago that we still are not necessarily paying attention to in the way we should. And this book, again, relays that message. This premiere, this video, I'll tell you, I hope people tune in at 2 p.m., because what it's going to do is it's not just going to be, you know, the 1963 story. It's going to parallel the 1963 story with exactly modern time and things that are happening right now. And I think that will help people really kind of understand and bring it to the forefront a little bit more on why we can't wait.
Do you think that there's, I mean, Oregon and Southern Oregon in particular, very, very white. I mean, are there lots of people you perceive that think that, well, we passed civil rights legislation 57 years ago. Everything should be fine now, right?
Yeah, and, you know, and that's why we're doing this project. That's exactly why we're doing this project. And that's what I felt from years of this particular celebration is it's, you know, the word celebration has been emphasized probably a little too much, and it's just been a celebration. But we're not really looking at, where we were and where we are now. And are we really that much of a difference in the better of where we used to be? And so, you know, my hope is that, you know, with this challenge and how we have it set up this year, where it's not just a day celebration, but it's a continuum where we'll provide facilitated conversations going forward throughout 2021, where we're encouraging people and putting a guide together for them to continue those conversations themselves. We're really hoping this is kind of the difference, where we're not just recognizing Dr. King, but we're really hearing and listening and beginning to understand his message.
I don't know if the video was done before the attack on the Capitol on January 6th. Is it included at all? And if not, I mean, how do you plan to incorporate that into discussions?
Yeah, we'll get in as much as we can get in. We are at a finishing process right now, trying to do some touch-ups on it. Mm-hmm. Big shout-outs to Evan Johnson at Blue Shift Media. He's my producer on this. He's done a fabulous job. But, yeah, we are trying to. There's a lot of things that keep happening, within the last few days. And so we're trying to make sure we're capitalizing as much as we can.
Yeah, that's a problem, as we keep getting more news that makes the story advance that much further, not necessarily in good ways. Mandy Yapob, before we go, I want to ask you about something that seems to be picking up momentum, which is Indigenous land acknowledgments. For people who don't know what those are, tell us what they are and what the intent is.
Oh, sure. So it's just that in any kind of public event or gathering, you should always recognize whose ancestral lands you're gathered on. And who the original people of these places are. And this is to bring some healing back and some also visibility that Native people have lost in sort of the mythology and retelling of history that's been quite whitewashed in our country. We really need to uplift these Indigenous people and the wisdom that they have and the fact that they're still here and they're still living in these lands for the most part. And so it's really an acknowledgement of these folks and the stewardship they've had of the lands over the millennia, and also to bring them into any future plans that going forward.
I wouldn't be surprised to find a lot of people who really couldn't tell you if pressed for an answer to say who the people were who did occupy the land before the current occupants.
It's true. I just had a meeting with another local social justice group, and we were discussing land acknowledgements, and they're like, we don't know whose lands these are, actually, and we don't know how to do land acknowledgements. And I'm like, that's fine, because if you go to nativeland.ca, mm-hmm. There's a really comprehensive map that shows the territory of most places. Now, some territory lines are a little bit disputed. Even here where we live, we've got what they call rogue Shasta that would come up into this area, mm-hmm. mixed with Tekelma. And we had natives from neighboring, places like the Klamath counties come over too. So there's some territory lines that are slightly disputed, but if you go to nativelands.ca, it's pretty comprehensive. You can look up anywhere in the world where those indigenous people's ancestral lands are, and it's really, really amazing and fun to look at. But also anybody can do a land acknowledgement. There's landacknowledgement.org, I believe, where you can learn all about it and have instructions on how to do one. Or you can always get in touch with the Truth and Conciliation Council here locally, of which I'm a part of. We're happy to teach you how to do a land acknowledgement. And it's important to note that it doesn't always have to be an Indigenous person giving the acknowledgement. It's actually great for non-Native people to be giving a land acknowledgement too. It's possibly even more powerful that we all are just doing this continuing education and understanding of the Indigenous peoples of our lands.
Okay. Last comment will go to Jessica Friedman. Quickly, in the minute we have left, tell people where they need to go to take part in Southern Oregon MLK events, not just on Monday, but in the weeks and months beyond.
Yeah, I'm happy to. Once you decide to take the challenge, you can go to somlk.org. That's where we'll have all the information you need. On Monday, you can find the event streamed at SOMLK Day on Facebook, and it'll also be on RVTV streams. You can register your challenge and make it official at jcls.beanstack.org, and you can find that if you just go to the Jackson right. County Library Services
okay.
website.
Out of time. Jessica Friedman, Mandy Yapa, Vance Beach, thank you all so much, and have a good observance on Monday.
Hi. Thanks, Jeff.